Welcome to Kildare Focus. I'm Clem Ryan, filling in for Cuiva all this week. Hope you can stay with us between now and three, because we're going to be telling you more about the new provision accommodation centre at Punchestown Event Centre, which has been announced for November. Also, solidarity people before profit TD for Dublin Southwest, Paul Murphy, as hundreds marched through the streets of Dublin over the weekend in a protest over the cost of living. Indeed, we'll have reference to the budget tomorrow, I'm sure. And indeed, also we'll get Paul's view on what's happening in the Gaza Strip in the last couple of days, with the death toll now over 1,200 people. What else have we got for you? Well, menopause. We'll be joined by a coach and founder of Mojo Matters, as a new survey finds that half of women fear for their menopausal symptoms that are damaging their relationships. Also, a new survey out today ahead of World Mental Health Day tomorrow, published by Women's Aid, shows the numbers of women who are suffering domestic and physical and psychological abuse. And we'll be hearing from Labour Senator and Party spokesperson on sport, Mark Wall, who says gambling ads must be urgently and immediately banned. Last week, the SRI brought out research that showed 1 in 30 people are struggling with gambling addiction. And I'm sure we'll get Senator Wall's view as well, as another Labour TD announces he will not seek election at the next general election, when that might happen.
Kildare Focus with Clem Ryan. Text or WhatsApp on 0833 97 97 97.
And of course, we'd welcome your messages on all the usual avenues, whether it be email, studio at kfmradio.com, or you could text or WhatsApp us on 0833 97 97 97, and some great music coming up as well. But let's begin with that story that we brought you this morning, which has been breaking over the weekend, that Punchestown is the latest centre to be designated to provide accommodation for people fleeing the war in Ukraine. Apparently, it's going to happen next November. Owen Beattie joins us now from our Kildare Today programme, and indeed head of our News and Current Affairs Department. Owen, what's the latest on this and how it emerged, and what maybe local reaction is so far, if there's any?
Yeah, so this had been spoken about for quite a while, hadn't been officially confirmed. There were talks between Punchestown and the Department of Integration, but we now know that it has been confirmed that from November onwards, 378 beds will be provided for people fleeing the war in Ukraine in the Punchestown Event Centre. So we would know that locally, Clem, as I suppose the, where the general election and the local election ballot boxes would be counted. Mainly women and children will be accommodated there, we're told, according to the Department of Integration. There will be 78 pods in the event centre, consisting of 2 bedrooms with a maximum of 3 people in each room, and we're told that a contract has been signed for a period of 2 years. I understand as well that there's going to be a meeting taking place tonight locally, or tomorrow night I should say, regarding what might happen there, maybe some questions that locals might have around the Punchestown area, but that's what we have at the moment. 378
is there any
people.
Indication indeed as to who might be holding that meeting, or indeed which particular side of the debate might be having this meeting, or is it being hosted by Punchestown Event Centre? Have we contacted them for a statement?
Yeah, we're getting in touch with them. I'm not sure whether or not this is an official meeting, whether it might be perhaps residents who might have questions that they want answered. I don't think any of the public representatives have organised this meeting, so we've been contacted by some residents who just had questions, but to be honest with you, I've seen the document that the Department of Integration has sent out to public representatives. It's quite a lengthy, it's 8 pages, so there's a lot of questions answered in that, and James Lawless circulated it to some media and on social media as well. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. That's what we have at the moment. 378 people is the maximum for the centre, and that contract has been signed for 2 years.
And are you going to follow up with that tomorrow morning on Kildare Today?
Yeah, James Lawless is coming on with us tomorrow morning just to get the official kind of confirmation, what he's heard from the Department of Integration and anything else that happens over the next day or so.
Okay, very well on that, Owen. Thanks very much indeed. I'm just looking for my WhatsApp, but I'm sure we'll find it at some stage here on the screen for me in just a few minutes' time. Thanks, Owen, and tune in to Kildare Today tomorrow morning for any news on that. And if we get a response from Punchestown during the afternoon, we'll bring it to you on our sports bulletins as well.
Let's go to that cost of living ahead of the budget that's been will be flagged tomorrow evening, with all sorts of nice goodies being promised or half promised or indicated or hinted at anyway ahead of the budget speech by the respective money ministers, if we call them that. And that will be tomorrow. That speech is beginning around 1 o'clock. Will take about 45 minutes. We'll keep you updated on it. Hundreds of people, some of whom admitted to struggling during the cost of living crisis, marched to Leinster House in protest. The Cost of Living Coalition led the march from Parnell Square to Leinster House, where a number of workers, pensioners, students, single parents and people with disabilities voiced their concern. That march, I believe, took place on Saturday afternoon. Paul Murphy, Solidarity People Before Profit TD for South West. Paul, thanks for joining us again on KFM, and you're very welcome to Kildare Focus.
Thanks for having me on.
What kind of sentiment then was expressed? Was it predictable, I imagine, at that march at the weekend?
Yeah, I think the broad sentiment was the government has to act to protect people from the ongoing cost of living and housing crisis, that it would be unconscionable for a government in one of the richest countries in the world, running a massive surplus, not to act to protect people from prices that continue to soar. I mean, the average family is paying more than €1,000 a year on electricity, more than €1,000 a year on other energy costs, more than €1,000 a year on extra grocery costs, and now many families are paying thousands of euros extra on their mortgages. And all of that is coming while the companies on the other side of all those transactions are recording record profits. The oil and gas corporations, the electricity companies, the big supermarket chains, and the banks, who have tripled their profits. So that's why we have to have action, and we have to have people protected from these crises.
Okay, I'm no apologist for the energy companies, because certainly I'm one of those, like many other people, who are staggered by the amounts coming at us. But they will offer the excuse, and have offered the excuse, that the reason that costs have been slow in coming down is to do with the way they hedge, that they buy in months and possibly a year in advance, and that they're paying the high prices of a year ago, and that it will be a while before it filters down, notwithstanding that we've had various announcements in recent weeks, and including today, of companies announcing cost reductions in the energy sector. Do you feel it's enough?
No, I don't think it's enough. And I think that explanation doesn't fully hold water, because they are those companies that have generation capacity as opposed to purely suppliers are all announcing record profits, from Electric Ireland, Bord Gáis, the other companies. They're all announcing record profits. And that's a thing that I think is not spoken about enough when we're talking about the cost of living crisis. There's now been a whole number of studies done at a world level, a European level, and an Irish level, and they all conclude that the driving factor behind the current inflation is massive profit-taking by these corporations. Like in this country, corporate profits have quadrupled over the past decade. And in particular, we've seen huge profit-taking happening the last 2 or 3 years. And the studies indicate that basically two-thirds of the inflation that we're seeing are due to this profiteering. And the question is, does this government represent those profiteering corporations, be they landlords, big bankers, private developers, or do they represent the people who are feeling the impact of these measures? Unfortunately, I think they represent the former, not the latter. But that's why we have a protest, to try and pressurise them to at least do something.
And has the government not been generous enough in stepping up to the mark here in offering those extra payments, which we've all received over the last couple of months? And now all the indications are that energy credits worth €400 per home are on the cards to be announced in tomorrow's budget.
I mean, I think people found the energy credits were certainly better than nothing. But the problem is that the government gave the energy credits without imposing any price controls on electricity, which meant that electricity companies could keep their prices artificially high in order to pocket a large portion of those energy credits. So a fair amount of that money flowed from the taxpayer to the government, back to ordinary people, and then into the hands of the electricity companies. And that's the problem, is that that's what the government, like you're saying, is talking about doing again this year, repeating a version of what they did last year, probably at a lower level, but not touching the fundamental issue here, which is the capacity of the electricity companies to set prices whatever way they want, and linked to the liberalisation and privatisation of the energy market, which has seen us go from one of the lowest electricity prices in Europe to now one of the highest, and in general having some of the highest prices in Europe. So we think that needs to be married with price controls on electricity, on fuel, on essential goods.
All right. Nevertheless, while the Taoiseach and Fianna Fáil leader Micheál Martin has confirmed that the cost of living package in tomorrow's budget will be less than the 4.1 billion in one-off measures outlined last year, I wonder if basically the government in indicating we'll have the rise of 12 euro in welfare and pension payments, we'll also have a double Christmas payment will still be in place. That's both, one to come in January, the double Christmas payment to come in December. There'll be mortgage relief help for people. Postgraduate students even will receive grants from zero to a maximum of 2,300. Simon Harris flagging that they're pushing for another 1,000 euro cut in college fees, that the minimum wage is going to go up by 140 an hour, etc., which is causing some concern for the likes of ISMI, which represents employers, small businesses, and that. What do you make of all this, that tomorrow's budget might knock the steam out of the opposition, including yourselves?
Well, I would hope that it will. I would hope that it will be sufficient to actually protect people from the cost of living crisis. But I don't think it will. I mean, take the 12 euros increase for pensioners and those in social welfare. Certainly that is a lower amount than inflation is running at this year, which means in real terms, people are suffering a decrease in their income. And that's, you know, the average worker has suffered a loss in real terms, in terms of purchasing power, of about 75 euros a week. And the government isn't willing to really address that. And like, they are going to see a situation where more people, more pensioners, are slipping into poverty in a context when we're running this very significant surplus. And I think that's, you know, that is simply unconscionable. It does not have to be that way. That is a political choice to allow people to slip further into poverty, kind of covering it up by a couple of one-off payments here and one-off payments there. But the basic rate not keeping pace with inflation means pushing people further into poverty. I mean, you know, 1 in 10 families in this country say they rely on food banks in order to be able to feed their children. That's just horrendous. And again, doesn't have to be that way with a series of different choices. And it isn't all just about like immediate measures to protect people. I think the government should be using the surplus to actually invest to address the housing crisis in a long-term way, to address the climate crisis. So, for example, investing in creating a state construction company as opposed to relying on the private sector to deliver housing, which has just so clearly failed.
Okay, if I might just change that, we'll know a lot more tomorrow, as I say, from 1 o'clock, the budget speech, and we'll keep you up to date here on KFM throughout the speech about the various measures. But it seems that everything that's going to happen in the budget has been well flagged and well leaked already. Cynics might say it's conditioning the electorate into a more positive view of the government parties or whatever ahead of that general election whenever it comes. We'll be reflecting on that later in the programme with Senator Mark Wall, who it seems they're losing another elected TD, with Sean Sherlock announcing he won't go in the next election. Paul, I saw over on Twitter over the weekend some messages basically taking yourself to task, saying why isn't Paul Murphy condemning the Hamas attacks that have happened over the last 48 to 72 hours. The Israeli death toll has risen to at least 700, including 44 soldiers, while an estimated 400 people have been killed in Israeli bombing attacks in Gaza. Now, I understand the background in terms of the historic decades and centuries old struggle that's been going on there. Nobody doubts the way the Palestinian people have been mistreated, have been exploited, have been oppressed over all those decades by the Israeli state and the Israeli defence forces and their allies and so on and so forth. But is there an absence from you, Paul, as a supporter of the Palestinian cause, in condemning what Hamas unfolded over the weekend, which basically, in a nutshell, was the killing in many, many cases of innocent men, women and children, including 250 people who were attending a peace music festival?
I mean, I'm opposed to the killing of innocent civilians, of course. Any right thinking person would be opposed to the killing of innocent civilians. It's horrendous looking at the scenes over the last number of days. But I think we do have to place it in its context. That isn't to diminish or justify or whatever those killings, but is to understand that this takes place in the context of a horrendous siege of Gaza, and putting Gaza, the people of Gaza, on like diet, starvation rations at times, and repeated regular bombings of Gaza, the killings of hundreds of people, like all the time, in a way that isn't discussed on the Western media. And 96% of those who have died in the Palestine-Israel conflict over the past, since 2005, have been Palestinians, not Israelis. And I think we have to put it in that context and understand this is the consequence of a horrific policy of occupation, of apartheid, and the answer is to end that occupation for the liberation of Palestine. And I think the vast majority of people in Ireland stand with the Palestinian people and think that their oppression needs to end. I mean, what is going to unfold in the coming days and weeks is going to be even more horrendous.
More horrendous is right, because the Israeli Minister Gallant announced this morning, mm-hmm. Defence Minister Yoav Gallant, he has ordered a complete siege on Gaza, as he calls it. And I'll quote, he says, "We're putting a complete siege on Gaza. No electricity, no food, no water, no gas. It's all closed," he said in a video announcement. Israel have launched over 500 bombardments of targets in Gaza. And, you know, is it not a case that what Hamas has done here, in fact, is going to be counterproductive? Because rather than allowing the world to focus on the injustices by Israel against Palestinians, the government in Israel now being controlled by Netanyahu, who's regarded as the most right-wing premier and indeed party ever to hold power there, is it not just totally counterproductive in that Israel has now the excuse to basically bomb the Gaza Strip practically out of existence?
Look, I'm not a supporter of Hamas at all, and I'm not here to justify or support or defend the actions of Hamas. And I would, if I was in Palestine, I would be a political opponent of Hamas very clearly as a socialist. I would say that it is only, what, 3 or 4 years since you had a peaceful march of thousands and thousands of Palestinians to the borders where they are hemmed in Gaza. And what unfolded was a massacre which saw hundreds of people, Palestinians, including children, killed. And so many Palestinians will say back to you, but we've tried this. We have attempted, you say we should have peaceful means of protest, and we did that, and we've just been mowed down by the Israelis. And so I'm not supporting what Hamas has done over the last number of days, but I am pointing out that responsibility fundamentally here has to be placed on the occupier, the invader, the Israeli state. And I mean, you know, you have, like you're saying, the Netanyahu government, extremely right-wing government, and a minister openly declaring that they're going to commit a war crime. Like, there's no ifs or buts about it. Imposing a collective punishment on the people of Gaza, 2 million people, is a war crime. I visited Gaza. It is this, you know, very, very dense place. People packed in together, like living on top of each other in horrendous conditions of poverty. This is like day in, day out, electricity coming, electricity going, you know, interfering with the operation of hospitals and so on. When you walk down the streets, they're just missing buildings all over the place. There's just holes in the ground where there have been Israeli strikes. And these things happen all the time. This is part of Palestinians' lives, is this terror that is consciously inflicted by the Israelis.
And it's only 12 and a half kilometres wide, I believe, and there's a couple of million people in there, maybe half the size of an average county. Final point on this, Paul, before we just finish up on the prospects for tomorrow's budget, is this not a case of a proxy war, in particular being used by Iran and others to advance their own political agenda, and on the other, and Russia and Iran, as many people are saying, on one side, and now the Americans sending their biggest aircraft carriers and everything else into it? Isn't it a case that the whole Palestinian situation is really a pawn in these world powers, of whether it be Iran, Russia, or the US?
Yeah, I certainly think there's lots of different world and regional powers that hypocritically will talk at times in favour of Palestinians, or mostly against Palestinians, for their own interests, right? That's true. But that doesn't take away from the legitimacy of the Palestinians' right to resist, right to defend themselves, and the legitimacy of their struggle for national liberation. So I think, for example, when you take the case of Ukraine, I think the US has its own agenda in Ukraine. That's not, you know, purely out of high-minded goodness of wanting the liberation of people of Ukraine from Russian occupation. I think they have their own agenda. But that doesn't take away from the fact that Ukrainians have the right to resist Russian invasion and the legitimacy of that. And the same applies for the Palestinians. So it's true that others can play games and so on, but the Palestinians are fundamentally in the right here, in my opinion.
Okay.
And I think it is horrendous that the West funds the EU, the US, funds the Israeli military to the tune of billions and billions of dollars a year in military aid, one of the most powerful armies in the world, against one of the poorest peoples in the world.
And Paul, finally, notwithstanding what has happened, can I be clear on something here? That while you support the whole case, and indeed you've articulated the context for the Hamas attack on Israel, can you or do you condemn the way that Hamas has carried out this strike on Israel?
Well, I'm against any killing of civilians. I think, you know, I'm obviously opposed to any killing of civilians, be that attacks by Hamas or be that the attacks that we're currently seeing at the moment in terms of bombings of residential buildings in Gaza and so on.
All right, and finally, on tomorrow's budget, all the omens look positive at the end of the day. Will it leave the opposition, whether to yourself or the other parties, with very little to throw back at the government?
Well, we'll see what's in the budget. I think, unfortunately, what we are likely to see is a budget which gives some crumbs to ordinary people, which doesn't equal what we're seeing in terms of the rate of inflation, and so that leaves people poorer at the end of the day. Leaves people with slightly more euros in their pocket, but each euro being worth less. And then, which continues, I would presume, in terms of housing, like this failed policy of more incentives for landlords, more incentives for developers, as opposed to saying we're going to use money to build social and genuinely affordable housing in a way that can actually address this crisis. And I'd also be concerned about all the talk about the health budget, that they're going to leave the health service effectively underfunded for the coming year. But we'll see what they say about that.
Yeah, underfunded, but in a context where, what's it, 20 billion or whatever is being spent on the health service, the big secret in this country is where is all this money going? Go down some hole, which just doesn't result in we getting the kind of health service that we need. More on that at a future juncture, I'm sure. Solidarity, People Before Profit, TD for Dublin Southwest. Paul Murphy, thanks for joining us on that cost of living protest, Paul, and also for your views on the current war, effectively, that's going on between Israel and Hamas. And we'll keep you posted on all of that throughout the day as well. Coming up, we're going to be talking about menopause, as a new survey finds that half of women fear their menopausal symptoms are damaging their relationships. The whole area of menopause, yeah, that's a very interesting topic. Looking forward to that. And later in the programme, Senator Mark Wall, who says gambling must be urgently and immediately banned. Not for the first time he's called on that. More of that, and keep your messages coming.
Kildare Focus with Clem Ryan. Text or WhatsApp on 0833 97 97 97.
Clem, don't forget to wish Kappa Camogie ladies a huge congrats on beating Leixlip in the Intermediate County Final yesterday, 3-13 to 1-5. We've been carrying it in our sports bulletins all day. Nace won the senior title, beating Selbridge. And it says, well done, Kappa. It comes in from Gronje, Sienna and Naomi at EBS Maynooth. Hello, everyone in EBS Maynooth. Isn't that a coincidence? That's the second time that I've come across the name Sienna today. And I have to say, I wouldn't have heard... Maybe I've come across the name for 20 years or so. There was a lady who used to work in RT television many years ago, Sienna Campbell. So lovely name. Oh, Anam Untuch Agus Gaelge er Fod Ato and Shin. And of course, everyone else, don't forget scoreboard this evening, 6:30 to 7. We're going back over an extremely busy weekend on the Kildare GAA front. Next weekend, it's the Hurling of Hurling with the B senior hurling final on Saturday afternoon and the minor A and senior hurling semi-finals on next Sunday. We'll have commentary, of course, of that senior final next Sunday. And that is Nace. Nace and Kyle Dove, isn't it, in the final, Owen? And you have other news for me now, Owen, as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Just if there's anybody tuned in to us this afternoon out in Rathcoffey or Kilcock and they're wondering where the water has gone, I can tell you there's a burst water main out there and supply is disrupted now around Baltracy Cross, Clonfert, Rathcoffey North, Brangenstown, Cortown Little, Duncreven and Balraheen and the surrounding areas. Ishka Aaron say that crews are out there working on the affected burst water main. Works are going to take place until 9 o'clock tonight, and it's recommended that you allow 2 to 3 hours after the estimated restoration time for your supply to fully return. We've more on that on our website, but really between Kilcock and Rathcoffey, a lot of areas there without water.
All right, we'll keep you posted on all of that as we go along. Now, menopause. Is that the most, how would I say, understood topic amongst us men ever? Because do we really know the impact of menopause on women? Do we appreciate it? You know, you'd hear sort of anecdotally, sure, she's just been cranky, she's had a change of mood, I can't make head nor tail of her these days. But on its most serious and fundamental level, is menopause something that plays havoc with the biology and the physiology of women? A survey has indicated that more than half of women fear their long-term relationships are suffering due to their menopause symptoms. That's over 51%. While almost two-thirds said their sex lives have been damaged. 64%. I think a lot more behind this survey. Well, let's hear then from a menopause coach and founder of Mojo Matters, Christine Lane. Good morning, Christine. Oh, no. Good afternoon, Christine.
Clem, are you sure you're not in the menopause? Good afternoon.
People will say every time I do this program in the afternoon, because of years of presenting in the morning, I keep saying good morning. And yes,
I'll be fair with you. I had to remind myself it was afternoon when I was coming out to chat to you. Thanks so much for having me on the show, Clem.
You're more than welcome. Now, this whole area of menopause, and I'm absolutely serious, and I'm not at all being flippant before the keyboard warrior started coming in at me and giving me a hard time. But menopause, it's something that is very, very poorly understood by men, I would say. I know that's a sweeping statement. Certainly, traditionally, whatever about maybe any bit of increased awareness now. Let's get the men out of the way briefly first, Christine.
I suppose what I would say there, Clem, is it's very poorly understood by a lot of people. It's not just men. Now, men don't stand any chance because they don't go through it, so they can only,
yeah,
their understanding of it can only be what their experience of it is. And you see, it's so different for everybody, Clem. You know, somebody might sail through the menopause and you might get a guy saying, geez, you know, I didn't really notice too much going on at home. But then on the very, very other extreme, women die by suicide during menopause, Clem. So, you know, I think it's actually fair to say it's very poorly understood by men, but it's also very poorly understood by men and women and, you know, however else you identify, because there's such different experiences out there of menopause.
All right, let's start, Christine, at the physiological level. What's happening? Yes. Explain it to those people who don't really understand. I take it all women understand because they go through it.
They don't. A lot of women are in the middle of it and they don't even know they're in the middle of it. Some women are out the other side of it and they think, is something wrong? I didn't notice anything was happening.
But surely, so, Christine, if a woman is going through the hot flushes, can't sleep, is feeling demented, completely out of kilter, surely do they not realise that it could be the menopause? Are we still at that stage?
Yeah, because you see, first of all, some women mightn't get, you know, the hot flushes. They mightn't feel demented. You've also got to take into account they tend to be in the sandwich generation where they've got elderly parents. They might have teenage children, work pressures. There might be other, you know, health conditions going on. So, you know, it's very easy to attribute a lot of these symptoms to other things, Clem.
Right.
But sorry, just to answer your original question, in a nutshell, what's happening in the body with menopause. So imagine you're sitting on top of a slide. We can all picture that. So we're sitting up in the top of a slide. Let's say women, just for ease, but I'm referring to all people assigned female at birth. So let's just say you're a woman sitting on top of a slide. At 36, you're right up there on the top of the slide, and so is your estrogen levels. So you're at your peak. You often hear hearing people saying they're at their peak age 35, 36. You've got your full quota of estrogen, which is pretty much the boss of our bodies as a woman. Now imagine you're sitting on top of the slide and you start turning 37, 38, 39 and so on. You get the idea. You're sliding down that slide and, you know, it's a consistent decline and you're losing your estrogen from the age of 36 onwards. Some people start experiencing the symptoms from 36 onwards. You know, some quite severe. Some don't experience anything until they're about, you know, they can be in their 40s, mid-40s. But as a rule, your estrogen starts declining from the age of 36. And that's considered the start of perimenopause. And perimenopause can last then anywhere between 7 and 10 years on average. So that's why we hear that age of 54. But the curtains have drawn by the time you reach in the age of 54 for most people. It's over by then, or it's ending by then.
What's meant so by perimenopause as distinct from just menopause?
So, menopause, I do lots of talks, Clem. Menopause only lasts one day.
What?
And, you know, so many people say, like, oh, God, like, it only lasts one day. What am I going through? So, menopause is the day you've not had a period for 12 months. What everybody's talking about, and they don't actually realise they're speaking about, they're referring to the perimenopause. It's that lead up to the day where you do not have a period for 12 months. And that's called the perimenopause. And that can happen really and truly anywhere from the age of 36 onwards. It's that decline of estrogen. And another few facts about it. You can still have periods. You can still get pregnant because it's the decline of estrogen. But your periods don't have to have stopped. They can be irregular. They can be regular.
Okay.
You can still actually have a baby. I work as a midwife, Clem. And, you know, I meet a lot of women who are having babies. And they don't realise that after they're having the babies, they're actually, a lot of them are going straight into the perimenopause. And then, you know, they have new babies.
Yeah, but I wanted this new survey, which was carried out, by the way, nearly 3,000 women living in Ireland, the age between 35 and 64, responded in September to this survey. And it was online at the Menopause Hub. And
that's correct.
Coming out of it, the research highlights the devastating impact that menopause is having on couples. I'm not sure if I'm saying to some extreme that it could lead to possible suicide, the huge depression,
yes.
Anger, the complete swinging from North Pole to South Pole of moods, and all of that goes, not to mention, of course, the impact it has on relationships between the woman going through it and the man, in many cases, who doesn't know what's going on other than, Jesus, she's gone nuts lately. I can't live with her.
Yes. So, you know, absolutely. Like, there are over 50 symptoms, Clem.
Oh, God.
You know, as a minimum, there's over 50 symptoms. But from all the women that I meet, the ones that have the really devastating impact are the psychological symptoms, the loss of confidence, the loss of self-esteem, the loss of get up and go, I've seen it bring career women to their knees, Clem. And that's very hard to go through. And it's very hard to accept, and it's very hard to, you know, and there's a lot of shame still attached to it, and a lot of, you know, I don't want anyone to know, like, that I'm actually not coping at all inside. And, you know, lack of communication then, and husbands or partners not understanding it. You know, it's a perfect storm, really. And like
overall, it's a lack of education, really, because I can tell you, as someone who went through the male education system, I don't think I ever heard the word menopause once in my life.
Well, and I can tell you now, Clem, I'm a healthcare professional for 30 years. And I never had any training as part of my formal training as a nurse, as a midwife, in governance, in clinical governance, risk management. I've worked with healthcare professionals, you know, obstetricians, gynecologists, midwives, you know, everybody in that sort of multidisciplinary team. And it was never discussed. It was almost like it just didn't happen.
And was there an attitude maybe from the medical fraternity in general, look, this is natural, it happens, go away and bear it and, you know, try and keep a positive outlook. Something as simple as that, because many women in the survey, over 70% of them said that greater menopause awareness training for staff at their organisation is needed. Something which you just reflected on in the last 30 seconds.
Oh, absolutely. So, like, I mean, I'm hell-bent. It's my mission in life, Clem, to educate anybody who will listen, actually, including why I come on the radio and do stuff like that. So Mojo Matters delivers education and training to workplaces. We do e-learning packages, CPD-accredited e-learning packages. So there's a lot of organisations out there now who are 100% embracing this. You know, they see the value in it. There's a lot more emphasis being put on well-being, staff well-being now. You know, you have a lot of well-being weeks and well-being months.
Okay.
So people do want to learn and...
And find out more. And Christine Lane, from my own perspective here, I'm an employer here in this company. So, and I just see part of the survey also reveals that employers can make simple adjustments such as relaxation of uniform policies and increased comfort breaks to help menopausal employees progress in their careers. But the point that would arise there, of course, it's not or cannot be for me to walk up to some woman and say you're going through the menopause.
It has to be
an information conduit that might come from them. But I do accept that as employers, we have to have that more accepting, maybe, profile that people would feel they can go to their employer in the first place anyway.
Absolutely. So it's raising awareness in the workplace. You're creating an environment where people feel that they can actually address it and speak about it. First and foremost, absolutely. Now, employees do have an element of accountability and responsibility. You know, we can't expect people to work out what's going on. You know, if we as an employee are struggling in the workplace and, you know, menopause-related symptoms, or whatever the symptoms are, actually, you know, if you're struggling in the workplace, we need to let our employers know, and, you know, we can get support in doing that. You can get, you know, but as an employer, I suppose where it would come in from an employer's point of view is, you know, if you're noticing an employee is not performing how they would normally perform, or you notice a lot of sickness is going on, you know, you would have to address that as an employer. So the approach you would take is a risk assessment. So you wouldn't ask them if they're going through the menopause, but a risk assessment would be done, which you would hope would highlight, you know, that there is issues with menopause.
Well, my own view would be often something as simple as, are you okay? You've been looking a bit out of, you seem to be a bit out of sorts lately. Is there any way I can help? And maybe open up the information conduit there. The Menopause in the Workplace survey has been released ahead of World Menopause Day on October 18th. So in just about 2 weeks' time. And it's something we all need. We all, men, and women, men particularly, we all need to get a greater understanding. But as Christine Lane has just pointed out, many women as well don't often understand what is going on with them. Mojo Matters, how can they get to your website or service you offer, Christine?
So you can catch hold of me on LinkedIn under Mojo Matters, Christine Lane. You can get me on any social media platform, Mojo Matters. And we actually do training and education for men and women. I'll come on some other day and I'll chat to you about andropause, Clem.
Oh, geez, andropause. That's another one. Okay.
Yes.
And very well worthwhile it is discussing topics like this.
And again, just like that, Clem, women need to understand that as well because, you know, you have a thing called the double pause. You could have a couple going through the andropause and the menopause at the same time.
All right, double pause. My good God.
Hello.
But well, I'll tell you, I'm an absolute supporter of getting these things out there and sharing this information. And Christine, we will have you. Mojo Matters is spelled M-O-J-O, as in your mojo. You'll have often heard of it.
Absolutely.
Mojo. And Christine Lane certainly has her mojo. Menopause coach and founder of Mojo Matters, Christine Lane. Christine, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Appreciate
You've
that.
You've been fantastic. Really enjoyed it, Clem.
Thank you. And it's an extremely serious topic, lads. And we need everybody to get the more information on it, particularly we boys. Now, and staying on the topic of women just for the moment, we've had our smear controversies down here in the South, in the Republic, for a number of years now, with many many women unnecessarily dying. Well, the stark news now is coming that about 17,000 women in Northern Ireland will have their smear tests rechecked by the Southern Health Trust as part of a major review dating back to 2008, according to the Irish Times today. The Trust said that some women will have to be recalled to have their tests taken again. A report from the Royal College of Pathologists found that although the majority of negative results issued by the Trust laboratory screening service were correct, a significant number of women are likely to have had negative screening results that would have been identified as potentially abnormal by other laboratories. Here we go again. After all the women who have died unnecessarily in this country, Vicky Whelan and so many others, and now we find it's not just in the Republic, 17,000 women having their smear tests rechecked. What is going on?
Kildare Focus with Clem Ryan.
Okay, welcome back. Clem taking over from Caoimhe this week. And indeed, from early November, I'll be taking over the afternoon programme for the period, certainly up as far as Christmas. So back on the air on your afternoons here between 2 and 3. Now, time permitting, we might be able to tell you if your pillowcase has a detrimental impact on your health and your sleeping, if time permitting. But first of all, Senator Mark Waugh, Labour Party Senator for Kildare South, has responded to the new figures from the ESRI that indicates gambling addiction is a far worse problem than previously believed. The ESRI estimates that 1 in 30 adults in Ireland suffer from problem gambling, 10 times higher than a previous measure from 2019. Mark Waugh, welcome. And it doesn't get any better, this news about gambling, does it?
Unfortunately not, Clem. Good afternoon. Good to talk to you, Clem. Unfortunately not. We're roughly talking, Clem, about 130,000 people. This is something that those that are treating those with gambling problems, gambling addiction, have been saying for the last number of years. They're obviously on the front line. They're experiencing increased numbers coming to clinics, etc. And now we have some evidence from the ERSI stating that, you know, there has been that tenfold increase, and that it's a huge worry for so many people involved in treatment of problem gambling in this country.
You say that the government must expedite the gambling regulation bill, which is currently in Dáil Éireann. What will it do?
Well, this is a bill that's been spoken about since 2013. So after 10 years, it's now gone through second stage in the Dáil. Some of the big issues in relation to it is the appointment of a gambling regulator, which we haven't had in this country. And also then, you know, in relation to assisting those that are working with gambling addiction in the country, and also self-exclusion register in the country as well, which I think is a very important point. There's also a watershed in relation to gambling advertising of 9 p.m. each night. And I think that's something that we've concentrated on in the Labour Party over the last number of years. You and your listeners will be very familiar with the number of gambling ads that you will experience. Some of those, you know, during the day when children are at home. So now the government are proposing a 9 p.m. Watershed. We would like to go that bit further like other countries have. But, you know, we have to start somewhere and we have to address this problem. And as we are doing today, Clem, start discussing this problem more and more.
You see, Mark, I don't have to explain to you. The real problem here is what we can do territorially. But how do you overcome the ability of people, youngsters? I was contacted directly here on the phone last week during the Kildare Today programme to bring a message to Owen. The message came from a lady who's working in a bookie shop. And she said, look, they're coming in here, they're under 18, they're this, that and the other. They're presenting IDs that we can't just cope with. The old idea, the alcohol and the nightclubs and that. But that's one thing on a territorial level. But how do you combat the amount of gambling or the type of gambling where anybody can press a button on their phone and gamble their life away internationally?
Yeah, and this is a problem, Clem, because the experience of those that I say are treating this at the moment would say that a lot of people are now, as you say, gambling on their phones. And this is the huge problem that we've seen, particularly since COVID, the increase here. So what we need to do is we need to have those self-exclusions. We need to ensure that those that are under 18 cannot access that. We need to enforce the over-18s that the gambling companies have at the moment. And some of them have done work in relation to this, but now we need to legislate it. And that's the thing that's been missing in this country. As I say, we haven't had gambling legislation since the 50s. It's been promised for the last 10 years. And at last, we're going to discuss it through the Dáil and the Seanad. And, you know, people can speak about that, but the most important thing is at the end of the day, we will have legislation. And then, obviously, as you rightly say, it needs to be enforced. But we cannot have a situation in this country where we now have 130,000 people who cannot afford to gamble but are actually gambling. And this is a situation which is at crisis point, I would suggest, for many people in this country.
Well, the study estimates that a further 279,000 adults show moderate evidence of problem gambling. And I mean, any addiction is troublesome and is it has to be taken very, very seriously. But of all the addictions, well, maybe this is too much of a sweeping statement, but the damage gambling can do in terms of wiping out your entire resources. I know other addictions can wipe out your life and everything else, but at the end of the day, this is enormous. And also, there needs to be some control, does there not, Mark, on the number of ads that we're subjected to. Or is it possible even to regulate that, not just in general advertising breaks, but around sport? Everything is sponsored by this gambler, this betting site, this, that and the other.
Yeah, you mentioned a very important point, Slim. First of all, in relation to the addiction itself and the gambling problem, you know, a lot of people, you will meet them in the street, you don't know that they have a gambling addiction. And this is what I get. And like yourself, I've received so many phone calls, so many emails from families that have been broken up because of gambling addiction. And those are the people that we need to protect and help and encourage. And so many have come out the far side. And we're all aware of sports stars in this country who have come out and are helping so many, the likes of Oisín McCombell, for one example, who are helping people. So just that needs to be stated, and that's why conversations like we're having today are so important. In relation to the gambling ads, so many countries now have banned gambling ads 24/7. As I say, the government are proposing a watershed that there will be no gambling ads on the media, on your social media, before 9 p.m. You know, and that's a starting point. And that's what needs to happen, because the gambling companies are very good. They've normalised sport and gambling. So now you cannot sit down and watch any sporting event without gambling ads being thrown at you. It's like a tsunami, as some people have described it. And that, unfortunately, for those 130,000 people, are encouraging them to continue gambling with resources that they simply don't have. Okay. So this is a very important part of the whole gambling regulation bill that's coming through the Dáil and Seanad at the moment that will be discussed. And as the Minister has said there in the last couple of days, he does hope to have that back before the Houses of Rockers before Christmas, and we will debate it there again.
All right, you can check out Gamblers Anonymous basically on their website. I see they're having troubles with their phone line at the moment, but for what it's worth, you can contact the regional phone number in Dublin, 01-872-1133, if you've been impacted about this discussion. 01-872-1133, or just look up Gamblers Anonymous. There are offices all around the country, and help is available. Meanwhile, Senator Mark Wall, I was going to ask you about Sean Sherlock. Can you give me in 30 seconds your reaction to the fact that Sean Sherlock is not going to seek re-election? Brendan Howlin is gone, and a report that I read over the weekend that I thought was a bit presumptuous, but nevertheless, that said Labour is in danger of having no TD in the next Dáil. They forgot to mention yourself, where the prospects might be looking good. But the likes of Jed Nash and others.
Absolutely, Clem. Look, in fairness, we realise, you know, that what we've got to do. I just want to pay tribute to Sean Sherlock in those 30 seconds. He's been a very good colleague over the last number of years. But unfortunately, we have a boundary commission that changed the boundary a bit, like myself in 2016. And now Sean would be totally up against it. Brendan has a very good deputy down there who will hopefully take his place. The Labour Party are not going away. We're still on the ground. I've done a clinic here this morning where I've met with about 25 to 30 people. And just to mention homelessness, I've dealt with 3 homeless cases here already today, Clem.
Okay.
But people need a Labour Party. Mark Wall is going, as I said before, to put his name forward for the people of South Kildare for the next election. And at the end of the day, and as I've always said, it will be up to the people of South Kildare whether I get elected or not. But I will continue to work up to that day, Clem.
All right. On that note, Mark Wall, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the gambling issue, which he has been campaigning on for a couple of years at this stage. Before we go, I'd like to pay a special tribute to an old friend of mine. Tommy Kinnan, one of Irish racing's most revered figures, has died at the age of 90 years of age. Father, of course, of the legendary 13-time champion jockey Mick Kinnan, or Michael Kinnan. Tommy himself had a great career in the saddle as a jump jockey. His most famous triumph came when he guided the Des MacDonagh-trained Monksfield to the first of his 2 champion hurdle victories at Cheltenham in 1978, when they beat Sea Pigeon and Night Nurse into second and third. Now, those 2 horses, Night Nurse had won the previous 2 champion hurdles, Sea Pigeon would win the next 2, so it remains as one of the great periods of 2-mile hurdling in this era, and Tommy Kinnan's association with Monksfield is fondly remembered by many. It was one of three Cheltenham winners that he rode, by the way, the other being Kilcolman in the 1977 County Hurdle and Stranfield in 1979. Des McDonough, the trainer, said, "It's very sad news. Tommy was a superb rider, a wonderful character and a great man to have on your side. He played a major part in the Monksfield story. He gave Monksfield a fantastic ride to beat Sea Pigeon in the Champion Hurl in 1978. And Mr. McDonough went on to say, "Tommy and I maintained our friendship all through the years, and I'll always remember our association with gratitude. Renowned as a tough, resilient rider, Tommy Kinnan also possessed a tremendous wit, which he retained all the way through to his later years. Indeed, I interviewed him here in this programme when he wrote his autobiography, and I met him a number of times as well. And Tommy, of course, was a wonderful fan of dancing, and he often tripped the light fantastic over around talkers and stuff like that. Born in County Tipperary on October 3rd, 1933. 13 siblings included two other well-known jump jockeys who later became trainers, Danny and Christy. We'd like to extend our sympathies indeed to Tommy's family.